Thanks so much for taking time to talk with me today, Eugene.
Well, I'm happy to be here and I'm happy to be talking to you as well.
Great. I understand that you've been awarded a Fulbright Fellowship to the Philippines this spring as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, congratulations on that. You were born in Manila and you immigrated with your family to San Francisco when you were a child.
Yeah, that's right. My family arrived in San Francisco. We're all together, my mother and father and their six kids. And this was in 1966. I was about 8 or 9 years old at the time. And so that was pretty much my first images of America at the time.
And how has that event from your childhood, how does it continue to inform your work today?
Well, it was a very important time because I think as poets, we're always looking for something to discover and to mm-hmm. see and to be always enthusiastic about the world. And I think for me, that was a very important period. And I try to sort of go back to that sort of feeling, that sense of excitement, I think, in my own writing, and which in a way inspires a lot of my travels because it constantly keeps me in that sort of moment of being enthralled. I think that was an important time in my life, and I always go back to that in that moment. In fact, I wrote a poem about that arrival, and I made a broadside of that just to give to my my siblings recently. So over the holidays, I gave them that poem to commemorate our 50th anniversary.
Well, I know that memory is another theme that comes up a lot in your work. And in your latest collection, My Favorite Warlord, you have a poem, Apple, that starts with a great line, "My people are never the same in memory." And then ends with this beautiful line, "Memory is another name for ghosts and their awful hunger." And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about memory as a theme in your work. Do you see it changing over time, or is it something that you just keep coming back to over and over again in the same ways?
Well, hopefully not in the same way, but it's become somewhat of an obsession as a poet. We can't help going back to things that we're sort of obsessed with, whether it's our arrival into a new place or a special moment that we can't seem to let go of. The third book was, in many ways, was a kind of obsession I had with my father, who at the time was suffering through a mild form of dementia, and mm-hmm. and so that idea of memory was something that I was really concerned about and worried about, and was fearful also of my father's passing, and so feeling those emotions I think informed the poem. But I think also that I think about memory as they're like ghosts to me, and they're invisible, but they're present. And it's sort of being acquainted with these ghosts that I think allows me to create the poems, and sort of embracing them and being letting them sort of into my life in some weird way.
Yeah. Well, would you mind to read a poem of yours for us?
Yeah, sure. Did you want me to read that poem?
Sure.
You brought
it
up.
Yeah, that would be great.
Apple. My people are never the same in memory. They are the dead come back for a picnic, a table set with plates of sliced apples. I'm there somewhere hidden in a tree. In my luckless 20s, still raw from heartbreak and prone to constant hard-ons, I watch through an open window a woman, middle-aged, naked, except for her utilitarian bra and panties. Her hair teased like a hive of cotton candy, eyelids a heavy purple coat. I could almost smell her vivid as my first kiss, Miley L, who had in her mouth some cinnamon red hots. The woman's lipstick was thick like car wax, red and cheap in a dime store way. She was fixing to go to work at some diner. I was then a college intern for the lame duck from my district, I was eager for everything I imagined this woman could teach me. This was in the city of Cain, where we kept the doors unlocked for alien thoughts to enter. If she were the first woman, would that make me the snake? See, the snake in the garden was a real smoothie with a killer pickup line. Me, I was just a salamander on a leaf. This before I learned my left from my right. Rolka from Rithke, Keats from Yeats. And many more years followed when I didn't understand the thing completely. Memory is another name for ghosts and their awful hunger.
Thank you. That was beautiful. Another aspect of your poem that I have really been drawn to is the way that you can move seamlessly from very kind of gritty details of contemporary life to kind of classical figures or figures from history or literary figures. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what draws you to history and some of those figures that you've used in your work and how you like to incorporate them in your poems.
Well, thank you for saying that. I think that maybe it comes from what I'm reading at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I find that often the poems that sort of emerge are sort of conversations I'm having with what I'm reading at the time, whether it's something I've been reading, in the textbook with my students, or a collection of poems, or something I picked up in a magazine or something. So, I'm constantly in that mode of conversation, but it's always within with myself, mm-hmm. something I keep in my journal or whatever. And so the process of the poem then becomes something that I'm drawing from the notes that I've taken over the past months or mm-hmm. days or whatever. And so that's how they sort of emerge. So I'm not really that conscious of merging history mm-hmm. or personal detail. I mean, I think it's all the same pool of information that where the poem comes from, and it's something that's sort of internal, I suppose, that I'm sort of drawing from.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
As a teacher of poetry, do you have certain mantras or certain lessons that you try to impress on your students each semester?
There is a kind of mantra I have, and I used to say it a lot, but not so much anymore. And it's usually particularly for my introduction mm-hmm. poetry workshop or intro to creative writing workshop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, you know, pay attention.
Mm-hmm. That's very good advice.
And read a lot.
Yeah.
And it's... It's two things that I think that pretty much summarizes our process. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the idea of looking is really very important to us as poets, and
right.
but it's not just looking and then, you know, being entertained by what you're seeing, but really looking, and it sounds so basic, but I think that's it really comes down to that.
Yeah, yeah, and something I think that students ignore, or they just don't acknowledge or think about sometimes. So it's good to be reminded of it. Could you read one more poem for us?
Yeah, sure. This is a new poem.
Oh, great.
And it's about looking. It's about seeing. It's called Salt. Some meals are better seen than eaten. Sentences better mangled than diagrammed. Life for you must be easy because you are beautiful. Because one day in a white cave, in a far-off mountain, weeks after you elected to burn, your daughters will be plying jorums of liquor to dull your husband's senses for good measure. Your girls and their odd instinct for procreation will do what they must to repopulate this plain of ash, sea salt with mouth slightly ajar, plain beauty with jaunty scarf, my American high school Spanish no clearer than my butchered French diagrammed as hieroglyphs on a street in a distant country. Most days it's all about the brag, an onlooker to your own disaster. I turn to stone, me who ran among the lesser adjectives in a city of better nouns.
Oh, that's great. Oh, an onlooker of your own disaster. That's a great line. Well, thank you so much, Eugene, for taking some time to talk with us on the radio and share your work with our listeners. We're looking really forward to hosting you here at Murray State.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in a few days.